We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw. Biggs time.
The Biggs Report. With Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us now on the El Pamonte Ford Hotline, El Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Big Z!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, it's very exciting because I think we have what we in the business like to call a winnable game. I think that I'm sure the Giants are looking at it the same way, but the New York Football Giants come in and the Bears could beat them 73-0.
Well, the Giants have one of the worst defenses in the National Football League. They're giving up more explosive plays on defense than any other team in the league. They've got clear issues on the back end and the secondary that are leading to a lot of these big plays, and they're able to combine that with an anemic pass rush, which, as you guys know, is a that's a really bad combination, but they're able to pull that off. Saquon Barkley had the high ankle sprain earlier this season that forced him to miss some time. Really hasn't been the same, and I believe it's the four games since returning from that injury. So that hasn't helped out the rookie quarterback Daniel Jones a whole lot. They were iffy at wide receiver to begin the season. And they've still got some questions there. Evan Ingram's a pretty nice tight end. When he's on the field, he's got some durability issues. So that's a team that's sort of trying to find its way with a rookie quarterback and a really bad defense. And that's got to make things extra challenging for Pat Shurmur, the second-year head coach.
Brad, we were kidding before the show about how the Bears are one of the only teams that we can think of that gets their tight ends from the Ivy League and their executives from the Ohio Valley Conference. But how might one Jesper Horsted from Princeton complement Ben Broniker from Harvard in the Bears passing game this week?
Well, Horsted, the only thing I could go off of is what I saw in preseason and then what I've been told since. And what I've been told since is that he's made some real improvements in some areas where he had zero knowledge or familiarity. He's never played tight end before they asked him to try it back in May as a tryout guy at rookie minicamp. So blocking and all those other things besides running routes and catching passes was brand new to him. And so they feel like he's gotten better there. What you saw in preseason was a guy with decent size. He's bigger than Broniker. He's certainly bigger than Trey Burton. I think they list him at about 6'3", 237, who can move a little bit and shows an ability to catch the ball when it comes to him. You know, he high-pointed one on a corner route at Indianapolis for a touchdown. I think it was third down from the 17-yard line, and he went up over a cornerback and made the play with a safety kind of bracketing him right behind him, and then had another touchdown there in preseason. So why not look at him? And I'll tell you what, he did enough in preseason, guys, that there were teams coming after
sniffing
him.
Around?
Yeah. Well, sniffing around with offers. So the Bears basically doubled his pay to get him on the practice squad. The minimum for a practice squad player is $8,000 a week. Horsted was earning $15,000 a week on the Bears practice squad before this transaction yesterday when he was promoted. And let me tell you, the Bears don't make a habit of just giving guys more money to be on the practice squad because they're generous or they think they're nice guys. Nobody does that. It's unusual for guys to earn above the minimum on the practice squad, and he about doubled the thing. So there was some people out there think that the guy's got a chance, and now he's got six regular season games to show a little bit. We may barely see him on Sunday, but at some point you would figure in the next month and a half he's going to have an opportunity or two, and I think that'll be good for his development.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that the Bears can't really pay the practice squad because they got to save every dime for backup quarterbacks and mediocre offensive linemen. So it makes sense to me.
The other thing that is going to be interesting with Horsted, if you're a backup tight end, that means you definitely have to be involved with the role on special teams. And one of the things he told me yesterday when I chatted with him briefly was that he feels more comfortable with what they're asking him to do at a brand new position on offense than he does doing special teams, because he didn't do a lot of that in school either. So that's led him to ask Chris Tabor, the special teams coordinator, for one-on-one meetings when the group stuff's broken up, just to make sure that he's got an understanding of exactly what he's going to be asked to do. I can't imagine he's going to be a four-phase guy, maybe not even a three-phase guy, but he wants to be comfortable with what he's asked to do when he's out there. And he's a diligent guy. He's a bright guy. He was a two-sport athlete at Princeton. I'm curious to see what he can do and if he can show enough for the Bears to believe, hey, this guy can help out the offense moving forward, because they've had a little bit of success with these undrafted free agent types over the last several years, and it would be nice if they could have another one pan out for them.
Brad, every Wednesday I kind of await your mailbag on ChicagoTribune.com more anxiously than I do my own mail.
Are you the guy that's sending some of the crazy questions?
A lot of them.
Do you have like a burner account?
I do have a couple of them. Shh.
It's called Dustin Rhodes.
You had an item yesterday I had to ask you about. So you point out that
the Cutler Trubisky word?
No, not that one. I like the way you answered that one, though. You said punt. But when you talked about looking ahead at the quarterback position, as we all have done already because of 2020, you point out that Marcus Mariota, one of the options that could be out there, has the same agency, Rep 1 Sports, as Mitch Trubisky. And you cited that as a reason that they might not give him a look or wouldn't consider him. Is that common? And is that a good enough reason to eliminate a guy who might be, a good fit otherwise?
Well, I mean, my belief is that the agent wouldn't want him to come to Chicago. Okay. And if the agent doesn't want him to come to Chicago, then good luck signing him. Right. It's not like you can claim the guy or trade for him. He's going to be a free agent. I just feel like if an agent has two quarterbacks that they believe should have a real shot at a starting job, and certainly Trubisky's representation is going to feel that, with an off season to sort of reboot, that he should be given every opportunity in the world to be the starter for the Bears next season in a competition or whatever the Bears wind up cooking up, they're not going to want to take another one of their clients and have that guy be the competition against Trubisky, because by default, one of them's losing the job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then one of them's a backup. So I would think that they would want to steer another client, in this case Mariota, to a situation where perhaps he can compete against somebody they don't represent, so they have an opportunity to have two starting quarterbacks out of those two guys, not one.
But it's the agent's fiduciary responsibility to put the player in the best position that he can. And if they believe
right.
that
yeah.
they, he could beat Mitch out easier than whatever
it's
other
a pretty situation. Good position.
I don't think Mariota's been good at all. Mm. You know what Mariota has in common with Trubisky well, right
that's
now?
That's what I wanted you to say. That's what I was hoping you would say that.
Here's the thing that they have in common right now from my vantage point. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them plays with confidence.
Right.
And that's a tough a quarterback simply can't overcome that. If the quarterback's not playing with confidence, why would any of the other 10 guys on the field with him at that time have any confidence on a given play or a given drive? And I think that's plagued Mariota in Tennessee as an observer from a distance and talking to people around the league as well who have used that same description with me that he lacks confidence. And I think everyone's kind of seen that with Trubisky this season as well.
I just wonder who's more likely to regain it quicker, you know, and maybe you have other options out there. I know you like Andy Dalton, and it does make a lot of sense, and those will be things that we can, you know, are going to have months to discuss and consider, but that just stood out to me because I think that if Molly's right. I mean, if you're an agent, you want to look for the best position for your client, but if you're the Bears, you know, that would be opening up a can of worms.
Yeah, Well, I don't think the Bears would care about having two clients from the same agency,
right.
but I think the agency would care. So, and the agents, you know, have a tendency to be able to steer guys to certain places and away from others as well. So, we'll have to see. You know, there's going to be a good handful of quarterbacks with starting experience that are available. All of them. Will be available for certain reasons, and you need to think about, you know, okay, well, why is this guy available in free agency, or why is this guy being given away in a trade, and consider what he can do for your team. But, there's going to be months of speculation on that.
Well, we have people checking in. If the Bears' tight ends can't get can't really hook on with the Bears, could they get a job in the Cubs front office?
Oh, are the Cubs putting together cameras too?
No, they just have a ton of what you call.
You're still on the stuff. You're still on the Goldstein stuff.
I gotcha.
Yeah, I got the Astro reference.
It's just they want Ivy Leaguers, I think. They have a lot.
Well,
not a tight end.
That's. I like that. And plus, Horsted's got baseball experience, too.
He does. Two-sport athlete in college.
That's right. That's right.
He could probably step in and help them immediately.
Especially. Houston might have an opening soon. Is that what you're implying?
I think Houston's going to have multiple openings. I guess the Astros owner was at the MLB owners meetings, and he was all testy, and he only wanted to talk about baseball. It's like, dude, you guys had the jerk who insulting women in the locker room.
Right, right.
And now you've been exposed to be massive cheats. Like, own it, buddy.
A lot of first pitch home runs and a lot of issues that come into play when you're cheating like that, huh? Do they have to vacate that title?
When they are penalized with draft picks, we're calling you, Brad.
That's right. Back on. You're our go-to.
Oh, it's got to be more than that. It's got to be more than that.
Would you break up the team?
No, but
maybe make Altuve go to the south side.
I think draft picks over multiple years, and there's got to be some lifetime. I mean, they've got to have some people join Pete Rose in the lifetime band category.
Oh, thanks, Brad.
All right, Big Z. Thank you, buddy.
Good stuff.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
Big Z is a great baseball fan as well as a great football man, he's not kidding around with
it's
all
a
that.
Fertile mind.
Oh, he's been trying to get you involved.
Plenty of thoughts.
Why are you ducking?
Plenty of direction. Yep.
It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network college football analyst. NCAA. Mullion Hawes, college football expert.
Mullion Hawes, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is always a delight to talk to Jerry DiNardo. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Jerry.
Morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
Well, I guess Minnesota's perfect season was ruined. Is that the way we're looking at it? I know you were out there. I watched a lot of the pregame, watched the game, very excited to see it. And Minnesota now drops to number 10, I believe, in the college football poll. What went wrong for Minnesota? And was it almost predictable given the big win and then hitting the road and all the rest?
Well, that was part of it. You know, the other part was the Iowa defense. You know, Phil Parker, who is the defensive coordinator, you know, he has an unusual way of defending the spread. And going into the game, you know, I felt like if the way he defends the spread works, Iowa wins. If it doesn't, Minnesota wins. And what he does is it's all about the RPOs, right? They run pass options where the quarterback meshes with the halfback, looks at a secondary player. If that secondary player supports in the box, they throw the ball. If the secondary player stays out of the box, okay, then they give the ball. Well, Phil wants it both ways. So he makes that guy a hard guy to read. So to me, technically, that's what happens. But, Molly, you bring up the big game against Penn State. That certainly did it. There were some other factors in the game. But we can say if Minnesota wins out, they go into the college football playoffs. I don't think any of us going into the season said that was right. Possible in November.
No, I don't think so either, Jerry. But I do wonder, what does this do to, number one, the narrative about Minnesota football? Number two, maybe internally, does this shake their confidence internally? Does it shake the perception of Minnesota as being sort of this lightning in a bottle type of team that has done it, everything's gone right for them this season, but when they step up in class, they can't handle it?
No, I don't think so, because if you want to look at the step up in class, I mean, they beat Penn State that's ranked higher than Iowa, right? I mean, so I think that would be unfair. I think the fair thing would be, you know, they've won 9 games. They've done that before. Let's see how this season, you know, finishes. I still think that we're all looking at this program as a program that has a better future than any of us could remember in recent years at Minnesota. And that's the way I'm looking at it. I'm not discouraged at all. I mean, they've exceeded my expectations this year. But to me, it's not about this season. It's about they finally have a niche, a personality, unusual as it is, and I think they have a promising future.
Jerry, there was a weird moment in that game with P.J. Fleck running out on the field. You ever have a brain cramp like that where you ran out on the field? I mean, that was nuts.
I ran out on the field once to stop a 2-point play. I actually was there spotting the ball with the official. We were playing at Purdue. I was at Indiana, and the students were behind us throwing stuff at us, and I was worried about our student trainers and our student managers because the players had helmets on. And I ran out to the 2-point play. Obviously, that's the 2-point play, the extra point. Purdue had just scored and was one of many scores that day. And I said to the official, if you don't make an announcement, I'm taking my team and going to the locker room. And they made an announcement, and wow, they stopped throwing stuff. So that's the only time I ever went all the way on the field.
What'd you think of his little error there?
Well,
it's a crucial moment.
You know, his point is that, you know, coaches are criticized for not caring about their players enough, and I run out there to see if one of my players is okay. I think there's two things that are questionable about that. One, the medical staff will probably do a better job diagnosing the injury if you're not there. And the second thing is, if I have to run out on the field to make my player know that I care about him, then I'm not doing real good Monday through Friday. I don't think that's the only way a player confirms that my coach cares about me, especially when I get injured.
Jerry, what do you think we learn about Illinois this week when they go to Iowa?
Well, you know, what kind of matchup they are, could they keep the momentum? You know, scheme-wise, David, again, I think, you know, if you're into the scheme, if you're into the X's and O's, this is the Phil Parker cheat the box scheme to stop the spread. I think Phil Parker is one of the best. I think Rod Smith, offensive coordinator at Illinois, is one of the best. So if you're into the X's and the O's and the scheme, you know, DVR the game, watch how Rod Smith tries to attack a defense of Iowa that stopped the spread of Minnesota. And the spread of Minnesota was pretty productive going into that game.
The college football playoff rankings came out. Ohio State is still number two. No surprise there. But Penn State, now number eight. Minnesota at number 10, as we said earlier. You know, obviously, you start talking about Penn State going into Ohio State, and I don't know. What's your take on this one?
You know, it's only been a couple weeks, right, that Minnesota beat Penn State. I mean, mm-hmm. It's not like this was a September game and we're in November. You know, the committee is just, you know, it's like finding Waldo. I mean, I don't necessarily know what they're doing. I've lost all confidence in them. But should Penn State be ranked above Minnesota? That would be a question. Should Alabama be at five? I love the Alabama narrative. It's about who they lost to. It's not we haven't heard who they've beaten. It's they lost
right.
to LSU in a close one. So let's put them at fifth. So, you know, quality of losses. I love that. When Ohio State lost to Iowa a couple years ago, that kept them out of the playoffs. Alabama loses to LSU, and they drop all the way to five. You know, Minnesota ranked below Penn State. I'm totally confused. Molly, I think you may have asked about the Penn State-Ohio State game. I'm not sure.
here locally in town, Jerry, I think Pat Fitzgerald was as critical of his quarterbacks than he has been all season long. And I think, and also talking about the lack of preparation, you'd wonder what role the coaching staff had played in that. What was your reaction to what Fitz said? Because the quarterback role and that position has been as disappointing as any on that team.
Yeah, I didn't see exactly what he said, David. Give me the short version.
Well, essentially, his quarterbacks weren't ready to play, and he had disappointment in the position and the productivity. And obviously, Hunter Johnson is now injured. But I think overall, it was a fit of frustration that I think that everybody understood, but you rarely see from Fitz.
Right. I talked to Fitz about this a couple weeks ago when we were there. You know, it's the noise and how a coach responds to the noise. And I think the three of us talked about it a couple weeks ago as well. But, you know, the narrative is usually the same when a team that's been winning starts losing, right? It's, well, we've done this before and we were winning. Why should we change? But it's always about it's not always, but a lot of times it's about quarterback play and it's about offensive play calling and so on. And so you have to address those issues. Now, oftentimes you don't address them by being critical of the player. You usually do it by criticizing yourself and or the staff. So, yes, it sounds a little surprising and a little out of character for Fitz.
I don't know how much you're on social media, Jerry, but I got to tell you, it gives you a chill when you see that Sean Clifford had to deal with death threats after the loss to Minnesota, the Penn State quarterback, and he ended up deleting all his social media accounts. That might not be a bad idea for everyone, the way this stuff's going.
I'm around it a lot, but that I don't have to deal with what Sean has to deal with. I think getting off social media is obviously the right decision. It's just awful. But I have to, you know, again, it's hard for us to talk about these things and keep it within sports.
Right.
But I think the world has changed more in our country the last few years than it has in my lifetime in regard to what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And I think in a lot of quarters, this has become acceptable behavior, what people are doing to Sean Clifford. And so it's not a football problem. It's a societal problem. I worry about our children, to be honest with you.
Well put, Jerry. You know, when you look at Michigan, Indiana this week, Shea Patterson was talking about what's next for the Wolverines. They have the big win over Michigan State. And I think he said something to the effect of, we've got one more to go. I know what he was referring to. Oh, by the way, Indiana 7-3, no slouch. Are the Wolverines taking the Hoosiers a little lightly?
Well, you know, the last two times they played in Bloomington, they went to overtime. And so, you know, regardless of what Shea said, and that's obviously not the smartest thing to say, but I think we all get what he's saying. I mean, he played very, very well against Michigan State. I think at the end of the day, the message will be, and it'll be more towards the end of the week, if it's typical coach speak, that Jim Harbaugh will make sure they understand that they went to overtime the last two times they were in Bloomington, and this is a better team in Bloomington than they played when they did go into overtime. So, you know, we're going to play Ohio State when it's time to play Ohio State, but you know, this Indiana team is good enough to beat us, and so on and so forth. It's all a coach speak, but that's what the Michigan players are thinking. There's no doubt. But a lot of teams have thought that and still won. You know, it's just when you compartmentalize at the right time of the week, and you get real about the situation. So I'll be shocked if Michigan goes into Indiana flat. They're not going to be as high as they are against Michigan State and Ohio State. But if Michigan's flat, I'd be surprised. And if they are flat, they could lose.
Thanks a ton, Jerry. Great catching up with you as always.
Thanks, Jerry. Good stuff.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yep.
That is always fun to talk to Jerry DiNardo. And, you know.
Big weekend in the Big Ten. I'm
well,
curious.
Minnesota is at Northwestern.
Yeah, I know. That's
and they got guys that are going to play on Sunday.
Michigan, I think, or Minnesota is going to take care of Northwestern. I'm more curious to see
I'm just curious whether I should go to that game.
Well, I think it's always interesting to see a curiosity. I'm curious about Minnesota in person
but
and to see how they
the
perform on the road. I don't either.
Boy,
I am more interested in Illinois going into Iowa and seeing how they fare against a ranked team, a good Iowa team. And Illinois coming off the huge momentum. They have the off week, bowl eligible. Let's see what they have.
All right. Sounds great. Mully and Haw on the score.
I was literally talking to BJ, and I was telling BJ, I said, BJ, they're killing him in the media. Just have him answer the questions. And I saw the stubbornness.
Yeah.
But what I didn't know was the background.
Yeah.
How difficult was it for you and for your family to go through all that, because you were just being Derrick Rose. You were a guy that was just coming off an MVP season that was injured.
Yeah.
But you were given no slack whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a different time in the sports world, period. Now we have to term load management. Like, I don't think that I would have, like, taken as far as Kawhi, as far as, like, they're really being cautious about his injury or whatever he has. But if load management would have been around, who knows, I probably would have still been a Chicago Bull by now. But it wasn't around, and I was doing what was best for myself, my family. And around that time, I had to think solely for myself.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And that was a great interview that Will Perdue did with Derrick Rose yesterday. Will, of course, an analyst for NBC Sports Chicago and a champion. And Will joins us on the El Pamonte Ford Hotline, El Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good morning, Will.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, unfortunately, I listened to that draft report. That's kind of one of those pros and cons. Unfortunately, it's going to take you longer to get to work today. But luckily for you, you get to listen to you guys a little bit longer.
Oh, look
Thank
at that.
You, Will.
That's just the way we wrote it out. Thank you, Will. So help us out. You know, it's fascinating, the Derrick Rose saga. And obviously, that was a big story last night with his return yet again. And Luol Deng, that was the retirement of the jersey. So there are a lot of things going on. Load management with Derrick. I don't know that Derrick never suffers an injury with load management. I don't know that maybe people are more forgiving of Derrick's multiple injuries and his kind of difficulty returning. But at some point, that relationship really soured between Derrick and the Bulls. And, you know, by all accounts, you would hear things like different guys would call in on different days to say whether Derrick was going to be there, whether Derrick was going to be able to play. He had a group of people around him that were suspicious of the team, and there was a lot of bad blood by the time he left. I just wonder if he really could have stayed a Bull through all of that, and if his departure would have been inevitable load management or not.
Well, that's the thing we don't know, and that's where – you know, when you think about some guys throughout their career as they've gotten injured and recovered and come back and played, if there would have been a difference. You know, there's the discussion about how serious the injuries are in football now. You know, do they need to play fewer games? Does the NBA need to play fewer games? You know, it's interesting that if they would have won, the one thing that I always said and was very fortunate to learn, you know, when winning those championships in the early 90s was winning cures all ills. Because I can promise you those championship teams that I was on with the Bulls, we didn't necessarily get along. But the one thing we did do, if you go back and look at the numbers, we were at the top of the list as far as fewest games missed because of injury. But there was a lot of discourse. But at the same time, because we were winning, it really didn't matter. You always wonder if Derek stays healthy, and maybe they win a championship, and then he gets hurt, if he gets a lot more slack because of the fact that he actually helped this organization win another championship. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And as you talked about, it just there was a lot of things that went wrong, and I think you're going to have to you know, point the fingers at a lot of different people, a lot of different reasons. It's not just a one-sided story where everybody can just say, well, that's on Derek.
It's a great question, and it was a fascinating interview, Will. And I think one thing I came out of it, I mean, we've all sort of dissected the Derrick Rose era a lot, but I wasn't quite aware of how, and I had forgotten, your relationship with B.J. Armstrong, Derek's agent, probably gave you you know, you were privy to a lot of things going on behind the scenes that the rest of us weren't. And it gave you a perspective that maybe the rest of us didn't have. How do you think that shaped your own perception of what went on? And how much did that also add to maybe the trust level that was obvious when you talked to Derek? Because you don't always see that with interviews and him.
Well, I started thinking because like I said in my tweet, I walked out of that interview thinking, you know, Derek's totally changed and, you know, he's grown up and he's a man now. Because as he pointed out in an interview, I mean, he was a kid. He didn't really understand how to handle the situation. You know, BJ was giving him some advice, but at the same time, he kind of had to learn on his own. But he became very susceptible of the media early. He, as he said, he felt it was personal and, you know, he closed the doors, didn't allow you into his world. And even I've learned some things because as, you know, close as BJ and I were when we played together and the relationship that we had, he still kept up walls a little bit about because he was Derek's agent. He was trying to do what was best for Derek and he was allowing Derek to be Derek. And I also have wondered over the last 24 hours as I've, you know, seeing this interview kind of spread out. I mean, I've probably watched it, listened to it again 3 or 4 times. You know, has he changed? Yes. But have we as a society, have we actually changed more than Derek? And is it because of the changes that have made, do we look at him differently because of the resiliency that he's shown, because of what he's been through and how he's handled it and how he's come out of it? And I think it's yes on both parts. And it was interesting to hear him say that, you know, he wouldn't really change much. I'm sure he'd rather win a lot of championships, but what he's learned, the person that he's become, and what people don't see, and they've seen a little bit of it over the last 3 weeks because Detroit's been in town twice, but the relationship that he's developed and he has with his son is second to none, and you walk away from that situation feeling proud because you say, hey, I've watched this kid grow up because he's younger than us, but at the same time, at 31, he's taught me a few things lately that make you wonder, you know, how did I miss out on that?
Was there any – there was rumor that they might bring him back in the offseason, and obviously that did not happen, and I just wonder why that didn't happen. Have you heard anything about why they didn't want him
back. I mean, I think they've put together, Will, a really, they had a sneaky good kind of off season. I know it's not reflected right now, but they got a lot of new guys learning to play together. But what that team seems to need is kind of one superstar player. And I don't know that Derek could still be considered in that category. But if you popped Kawhi into this current Bulls team, you'd have a really good team. But they just aren't getting it done, you know, with terms of the one star.
No, they're not. And you know, Kendall and I always have this discussion. And I think as you guys mentioned at the beginning of this interview, I think there was just, you know, too much baggage as far as how things were handled on both sides of the ball, quite honestly. And I don't know this for a fact, but I just think that the Bulls felt that, you know, maybe because of how things happened and what's happened in the past, that it would be in the best interest of both Derek and the Chicago Bulls, you know, to not bring him back. Now, I'm not saying that's not going to change. And you always think hindsight is 20/20. And you think because of the struggles that the Bulls have had, 5-10, didn't get off to the start that they wanted. You know, they were able to draft Coby White, and you don't know that Coby White's going to be the player that he's become as far as his ability, you know, to knock down shots and to score points. But you do think about, because Derek's accepted who he is, he's accepted his role, you know, how good would he be with Coby White? Good would he be showing Coby White how to play the game as a guy that comes out of school after 1 year? How do you handle the adversity? Hey, dude, you come talk to me anytime you want. Come lean on me because, you know, I don't think you're ever going to face anything that I faced, how I faced it, but I got a lot of answers for you.
Will, last night, Lauri Markkanen provided a few answers, and we've been waiting a long time for that to happen. 24 points, and it's been since, I think, October that he scored 20 or more. What was different, and why has he struggled to the extent that he has, in your opinion?
Well, the first thing was, what was different was a lot of the baskets were easy. There wasn't a lot of resistance, you know, from the Detroit Pistons in their defense. They're a team that's dealt with a lot of injuries. They're a team that has dealt with numerous lineups. You saw a lot of things going on with them that we've talked about as far as their defensive rotations were not there. They took a lot of quick, poor shots, which gave the Bulls the ability to get rebounds. They actually won the rebounding battle, get out on the fast break. Detroit's defense was never able to set up. But I also liked what I saw as far as Lowry's movement without the ball. He had a lot of points in the paint. He had a lot of catches on the move, stepping into his shot, not just standing on the perimeter waiting for the ball to come to him so he can shoot a three. Now, we don't know if that's going to continue because, like you said, it's been a while. And it's been a while, meaning it hadn't happened since the first game against the Charlotte Hornets when he dropped almost 35. But what we don't know is what is going on and where is that consistency? Mm-hmm. Because the one reason why I think we're critical, the fans are critical, because Media Day, they talked about their aspirations are the playoffs. And John Paxson said, for us to be good, Lowry Markkanen and Zach LaVine have to take the next step. And what we haven't seen is that on a consistent basis. Lowry struggled as well. And I don't want to say struggled, but maybe he wasn't looking to be Lowry in the preseason, because then he steps up in the first game of the season and has that unbelievable game. And we're all like, here we go. Even though they lost, you did see a lot of positives, as frustrating as that first loss was against Charlotte. But now the question is, how do we make that happen on a nightly basis? And how do we figure out how to let him and Zach have games like that on the same night so that this team can start piling up W's?
Well, we're out of time. We'll let you go. Just curious, will they have to choose between Markkanen and Zach LaVine? Will that decision come at some point here?
Well, it hasn't reached that point yet, but you've got to think that they've had that discussion behind closed doors because they just haven't been able to do it on the floor together as of yet. But you just pray and hope that these guys figure it out. I know it's only been 15 games,
right,
but we expect it different because of what we thought was a very, you know, soft schedule. And it only gets harder as we get going. So, you know, you hope something changes because we need better, we want better, and the fans deserve better.
Good stuff, Will.
Thanks, Will.
Great interview.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you.
Take care.
Were you saying great interview with Derek, or he did a great interview with us?
Did a great interview with Derek.
I liked his interview with us.
And he was very good with us.
Thank you.
Because I think what he said about LaVine and Markkanen is a good question and an excellent answer because it was honest.
All right, we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to bring in Butthead. Kevin Butler, the glorious Bears kicker, will join us, and we'll talk to him about whether you're lowering standards. We'll ask him what Dave told us and how that works.
About Eddie Money. The counterfeit kicker.
Eddie Pinheiro. He's got two tickets to paradise.
Another musical reference.
Oh, sorry. All right. Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Pinheiro with the De Niro kick.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.